Major Han, Reel 47. You were saying that you thought this Spandar must have had a night sight because it could see you, or the gunner could see you walking down the road.
Well, it appeared to me as though it did, yeah. Because wherever I was on that particular road, it seemed as though the shots were going just above my head. And I hadn't heard of night sights being used, but I thought, well, they could well have had something like that. And it appeared wherever I walked in the dark, each time I walked to that trip, I seemed to have been in line.
What about when you went to that troop in the daytime? Did you get shot at then?
No, because I didn't approach it from that HQ. I'd come from one troop to the other, which I think probably had some protection from.
So using a different route.
Whereas probably I was a bit more out in the open and away from it. So. I only encountered it at night, although we used to take it very cautiously if we went that way, anywhere near those particular troops in the daytime. We'd probably go along in the ditch. But that was very interesting there, but as I say, we were about 500 yards, 600 yards away from the river where Squad Headquarters was. And of course, all the around outside the farmhouses we'd built up, or the Canadians had also built up strong defensive positions outside of the house. So, it had been silly to have just stuck in the house, and so we had dugouts all around, but quite often they were waterlogged, being so close to the river. And the amount of rain we'd had. But the house was used as a base for the troop to cook its meals in and sort of get a little bit of relaxation and things. Well, they couldn't relax very much with the enemy being a few hundred yards away.
Well, did you have contact with artillery or air support in this area too?
We didn't know.
You didn't. But did the regiment have?
I think the regiment would have.
Could call support.
And also too, they used to send over the Moaning Mini in that area too. So it was you couldn't just sit and relax. There was always something to keep you on your toes. There wasn't a day or night passed without some type of shelling or the Moaning Mini, I think. And each night, the squadron leader and I would make a visit to all the troops' positions. And I say, and I used to also go around with the supplies. When the Spandar was going, with the squadron leader and I, we'd have to finish up by crawling along the ditch before turning down to the squadron. It was always a well-known thing. After 5 days and nights of cold, frosty and wet conditions, A squadron arrived to take over our place, so we had a chance to catch up with sleep. And then 5 days later, we were back in again.
So it was a rotation.
Each squadron was done. And then you would sort of brief the other people, what to expect. Spandar was still a thing to avoid.
Did you manage to spot any of the enemy positions from?
Not really, no. You couldn't, because the position we were, I think that was more of a holding sort of position than anything. Sort of having someone on the ground in case that. They should come across, because if they'd come across there, they could have probably swept left or right and hit the flanks of one of the infantry battalions or whatever. Um, We did see one force of about 80 medium bombers and a strong force of fighter bombers targeted the enemy defences to the north of where we were. And at the same time, guns, the artillery laid a heavy barrage, and that was preparing for the attack on Forley, which was going to be made by the infantry division. I think that was... No, it was the Oak Tree division. I'm not sure which one it was. They assembled a tree. I think it was an Oak Tree.
Would that be 56th? No, that was the Black Cat, wasn't it?
It wasn't the Black Cat.
48th division, perhaps? That Sherwood Foresters was in that division.
Yeah.
So it was Midlands, I think.
Yeah, I think they did the attack on Forley. Yeah. I'm pretty certain they were the ones who did it anyway. Mm. And on the 8th of November, we were told to create as much noise as possible.
Oh. Well, this is a distraction.
Yeah, and so we had to go hammers and banging on metal, and as well we were building bridges in our area, you know, and this was going on, and we laid smoke screens along the river bank, and all that sort of thing. Machine gun fire was directed across the water. And all gave all the signs that a Bailey Bridge was being constructed. And this went on the 8th of November. Of course...
Did the enemy respond to all this racket?
Yes, heavy shell fire came to the we were at the end of it all. I think we had one, Corporal Taylor was wounded in that. And this deception continued throughout the night. Meanwhile, 4DIV and 46DIV, that's the one you said, wasn't it?
Yes.
They mounted an attack in another area onto Forley. And that led to the fall of Forley. So it was it's quite a...
So it's the first time you've done a deception.
It is, yeah. It's probably a good thing. I brought the enemy into that area and thought they were...
Well, at least it sounds like you've attracted some shell fire that could have been used more profitably elsewhere.
So we brought a few things away from the enemy, so we slayed them a bit. So, but anyway, they went across. And of course, we then got into our armoured car and we crossed the Ronco into Forley. And there'd been a lot of shelling and bombing of the area. The streets were deserted, and apart from the odd shell explosion, nothing much else. No sign of the enemy because the infantry had been through it. And we then carried on.
This you went through the town,
through the middle.
We had
crossed the bridge.
The bridge which the enemy had. Yes.
It led up from Falling Poppy, where our armoured cars were, and then you went on into Forley. And then I think the next town was Arezzo, I'm not certain. It went on straight up Route 9 to Bologna, and that was the route.
So. Okay, so this big attack went on and you were involved in deception, and then was it the next day that you were back to get your armoured cars, or sometime after?
No, it was more or less the next day. As soon as Forley fled, our deception was one end.
Yes.
The attack went in the other end, and then we went and got our armoured cars and we went straight in after the infantry.
Into the town?
Which by then had been cleared anyway.
And then you were pushing along Route 9 as a main avenue.
Yeah.
Did you
spread out actually?
Spread out. What, on either side of Route 9?
Well, yeah, any route. But it was quite slow because then again it wasn't very far before we came to our next obstacle. You know, which was the River Ronco, the River Montoni. The Ronco Montori all going east to west, natural obstacles, all being defended by the enemy, so progress was very slow. on the 12th of November, I was again sent to a reinforced three troop for the day, and we had three enemy were made in the morning, and we got another eight in the afternoon. So we got 11 of them there.
What were these? These stragglers?
In positions, in houses, mainly in houses. Mm. And if you knew they were in there, you'd shoot at the house, and then they'd probably wave a flag or something, and then we'd let them come out, and we'd take them in. They were obviously left as a rear party, sort of defending, but not very anxious to, at that stage, to risk their lives by defending a house, say three men or eight men. Mm. You know, you can't do a lot of damage, especially with an armoured car up against you.
Did you take this as a sign at the time that the Germans were beginning to lose their military spirit and their will to fight?
Not really. Mm. We took it as still a part of their withdrawal, you know, until they could get to a better line, because that was always their thing. They would never just give in. They'd always sort of, wherever they were, they'd withdraw, but they'd always leave something behind to slow you down. Mm. You know, so this was that. But you never took it for granted that this was the end. Mm.
So you're saying you came up to the Montone going along. What was that like, the Roncone?
Not quite. You came along the river, and it's a different type of river. This had low banks, whereas the Roncone had high banks by the side. A river, and I think the main a road ran alongside it, you know, parallel with the river, the road. And so it's a different sort of situation again altogether. And you could get a view over the river. But it was enough to hold you off. So it was all in this particular area where we were finding the odd prisoners, our side of the river, not the other side. And I think in the same, on the 13th, the following day after we came to prison, Bobby Collins, Lieutenant Bobby Collins, he was leading a successful attack on a strongly defended house near Romandello. And one of his men, Trebogania, was wounded. And Bobby Collins was shot in the bottom. As he was lying down, you know, sort of. And the funny thing, the same thing happened to his father in the First World War. He was shot in the bottom.
Does this mean that he was attacking on foot into the house?
Depends also on, you might well sort of leave your arm and car somewhere, skip a covering fire one side while you sort of did a thing.
A flanking movement.
And that could have been what he was doing then. But Gaynor was a young lad who was killed. Anyway, Bobby went back, and that was the end of his war for a while. So he came back to the regiment, and he's still around. He's a great historian. And about the same time, Sergeant Jimmy Purvis, he was leading two troop then, after Michael DePiro was killed. Jimmy Purvis took over and commanded the troop. And he was on a patrol in the St. Tomi area. And is leading a scout car, and he's driven by Joe Kerr, and commanded by Corporal Dawe, Joe Dawe. He came around the corner and came face to face with one of the great massive Tiger tanks. And of course, such a short range, you know, blasted this Daimler scout car, and these two young men were killed instantly. They're two, you know, young 21-year-old boys, if that might have been 20. And of course, we were again very close to them, and the squad leader told me to get there straight away, so I went. And poor old Jimmy Purvis was in state of shock completely, as he would be, you know, because they were great friends and so on. And of course, then we had the task of recovering the two bodies out of the vehicle, and again had to wrap them in blankets, and we dug a grave in the farmyard, and sort of buried them both. That was just a pretty harrowing thing for two such lads. And it seemed quite a waste of life. So I know I had a bottle of whiskey one of my bins, and I sort of made old Jimmy Purvis take a good streak, you know, to sort of calm him a bit.
Did it do the trick?
Oh yeah, well he had to go back on patrol and, you know, sort of the next day. But you know, it was sort of upset everyone. Everyone's really on edge on something after something like that. You know, it's you've got to sit back and have time, but if you're straight back into action again, it takes your mind off a little. But you know, that was a terrible thing, just to go around the corner like that and be hit by one of the biggest tanks they had. So, anyway, that was all then. That's when we started getting again into the real fighting side, you know.
Going across that plain of Lombardy and the Romagna up to the northwest.
And that night we spent the night in the area close to Canal di Valdino. I mean, all this you see on the map, if you've got it. But the enemy was still defending the River Montoni line, and they were shelling us quite a lot at the time.
Were you then exploring sort of left and right along the river?
Along the river side, yeah. I mean, it's going up to this sort of river that they met up with the Tiger tank. So, because it was the sort of country where they could use those sort of vehicles. We were coming up across demolitions, mines, the area was waterlogged, and so as progress was very slow until we actually reached the Montoni. And then we started sending out foot patrols, quite big ones, in an attempt to establish where the enemy were.
Did you actually go across the river?
No, across the river. This was just before the river.
So they're on your side of the river, the enemy.
What
do you mean by quite big foot patrols? What numbers?
Well, normally we'd send eight, we'd probably send double the numbers. Because we expect them, probably if we hit anything, we'd want
some support.
We were sending out patrols to try to establish that position. And it was marshy and cold, wet. So it wasn't very enviable to us. And Corporal Raisi failed to return, and A Squadron lost three men, on the same sort of thing.
Mm. Well, they're just going out on patrols and finding the enemy. What sort of positions had the enemy got laid out along the river? Do you know what patrols found?
Strong points and things like that, you know, which was
But when did you have the armoured cars then while you were doing this foot patrolling?
Well, you would make the cars would be back with squadron headquarters, I mean with one man in each, and you'd make up a patrol from, you know, say the people in the support troop, a couple of spare people in the, you know, the headquarters, and you know, that sort of thing, and say about six from a troop.
Yes.
And you'd gradually make up that way.
I mean, were there any men who were chosen regularly for patrolling because they were good at it, or did everyone have a turn?
Well, no, you'd normally pick people who knew, you knew were good, sort of had a good eye for the country and the going and that sort of thing. So you wouldn't just pick people who weren't experienced or you didn't think would be any good at it. So you never use cooks, you know, and that sort of people, because that wouldn't have been fair to them to put them in a job like that.
Who actually tasked the patrols, gave them their
orders?
So, yes, yeah. He would give them the mission of the patrol, as it were.
Also, it would be with the commanding officer would give him the picture and say, well, this is what we want you to do as normal. He'd be set his task by the commanding officer, wouldn't he? So it'd go on from there.
What was the country like going up towards Montoni? The terrain and topography?
Not totally closed in. I think rather like this type of area, like the Shropshire area.
Around Shrewsbury.
Yes, right, yes. But nothing, no high mountains or that sort of thing. It's quite flat. And plenty of water about, fields and vineyards. That sort of ground.
So I mean, what was the main aim to discover the positions of the enemy, or what the going was like, or
what? To find the enemy, really, and report to, if we could find the enemy and pass back what he's doing or what he's likely to do, if he's dug in or if he's on the move back or if he's any information we could. Apart from that, there was nothing else we could. Once you passed that back, then it could be sorted out by those in the rear.
Who was actually holding the front line then when you were doing this patrolling? Or were you holding it? Were you?
Well, I think there's either the Canadian divisions or the Indian divisions. They were all up there, you know, doing the main holding of the line. I mean, I don't think we were in the line as such, in a holding position. We were going forward trying to establish what was going on, but I think always behind there'd be a
solid infantry base behind you.
Oh yes. Not a case like when we were in north of Castle of Isangro, where nothing else was behind me held.
You were on your own.
We were on our own. This, you had the whole of the a division, or I think there was the 4th Indian Div, the 8th Indian Div up there at the time, and the Canadian Division were all around.
What were the enemy doing in this area? What was their main activity?
They were mainly withdrawing. You know, sort of holding us back as long as they could, but not in any strength. I think it was just a matter of falling back to the next river line, delaying us as much as we could, until they got to, say, I think the River Po, which was a place where the next big battle would take place. And then from then on, it's sort of defending up to Milan and Venice and Trieste.
What? I mean, were the enemy active in? Were they patrolling forward as well to disrupt our operations?
They weren't coming forward at all at that stage. Mm. It wasn't until a bit later that they started doing a bit, but that in this particular area, they were just as happy to let us come on. And
Were they conducting ambushes, or were
not
were
too many grave? No.
Wasn't like it had been before.
Not like in Gubia, because I don't think the country allowed it.
Mm.
And it wasn't, so say they weren't very enthusiastic at that time, I don't think.
You were saying you had some casualties. Was this when your patrols bumped into enemy outposts?
You probably might lose quite a number with shelling, you see. New Zealand Division were involved.
Yes.
And later we did come under New Zealand Division.
Mm.
By then we were to the north was Ravenna. We were in that sort of area, which again is very watery.
Here you've switched over to the east again, haven't you, if you're going towards Ravenna away from Forli.
That's right.
Yes, because Ravenna is...
Well, we had switched over a bit more as we went over towards that area, Ravenna.
So that's just south of Venice, isn't it, if you look at the map?
Well south of Venice, Ravenna.
Yeah.
It's just on the coast from just north of Rimini, that area. That was a wet and miserable area. And I then went to Friedrich, and that was at dawn, and they were right out in the marshland.
Mm.
And then you were getting these heavy mists, and visibility was poor. And from then I went on to Fortrook. And the enemy found our positions then, and they really saturated the air with shell fire. The Gurkhas arrived, and we moved back to Forli to rest. And then we awaited the fall of Faenza, which was the next one up on the coast road. But while we were in Forli, we were attacked quite a number of times with aircraft at night, bombing the town.
This was the Luftwaffe reviving?
Yeah.
Mm. Did they hit anything significant?
I think A squadron suffered a few vehicles destroyed.
Mm.
And we were also getting some shell fire from... Mm. Heavier guns, enemy artillery.
Well, medium guns, would that be? Yes.
Yeah. Mm. And they were hitting the town as well.
Mm. Were they just bombarding the town at random,
yes.
I think?
Mm. Mm.
Just wondering
if
they actually.
It's all about a point where people pass through as well.
Mm. A necessary point on the the road.
Yeah. Mm. And, then on the 5th of December, the squadron returned again to the cold and miserable banks of the Montoni.
Mm.
Again, to be shelled and machine-gunned for another week when the 44 Recce Regiment took over.
But when you were on the banks of the Montoni there, were you occupying forward positions or were you...
Yeah, we were in sort of farmhouses and things like that. It wasn't too bad there, because some of the farms were occupied, and you would get some meal, a goose or a gallini, they would kill for you, and you would give them sort of some of your rations, like they used like corned beef and stuff. We would give them something like that, and they'd love it, and they would cook us a goose and some spaghetti.
Mm.
Yeah, which was a very welcome
variation in the diet.
And also it made friends with the local farmers, and they